gardens. Only he can dress like a sloth and get away with it.
And say some very like important educational things.
Oh, yeah,
he's
working.
Costume, and I'm trying to take you seriously in a sloth costume.
It's just not possible. how is it that we take you seriously out here?
My job is not to be serious here.
Right.
My job is to show people why I fell in love with this place, because it is such a fun, inspiring place to come out.
And we're impressing his boss in front of his boss, the CEO
right,
of the Jacksonville
okay.
Zoo and
that's
Gardens,
right.
Dr. Jeff Edding. Appreciate it. And thank you for having us here, Dr. Edling.
Yeah.
We really do appreciate being here. I know you like to wander the zoo. You're not always in the offices, I hear. You're out in the elements with everyone on a daily basis. Why is it important to you to be out here every single day in the way that you are, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, there's first of all, you know, thank you for being here with us. You know, I mean, you're on a beautiful site here in our new watering hole overlooking the Trout River. I mean, a little cool right now, but it's great.
It's all right.
The sun's coming up. To your question, you know, I think it's important for me to be visible not only to our team but to our guests. And then I see things every day, and I take photos of and I share with our team, you know, whether it be facilities or animal care, whatever it might be, because I think it's important to keep this place looking as fresh as possible all the time. And so some of what I'll probably talk about here in a few minutes is directly related to those visits out on the grounds every day. But it's also healthy for me sitting behind a desk or being in meetings, you know, all day. It's a good release for me to just go out and walk. And I usually get about 4 miles a day in. I go out maybe around lunchtime or before, and then at the end of the day, I'll go out and walk again. And I try to do that daily, you know, but I think having that presence is very important.
What's your source of pride here?
Our people. You know, this place would not operate without the dedicated team we have. And, you know, and that's everyone. I've said from day one that everyone's role here at the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens is equally important to us achieving our mission as a conservation organization. And as a accredited member by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which is a very small number of organizations when you think about the fact that we also have a USDA license to be an animal exhibitor, and there's over 2,300 USDA licensed exhibitors. There's only 213 that are accredited here in North America, or I should say right here in the United States by AZA. We have a lot of outside of the country members now too, because we're considered the gold standard of accreditation. And even though a lot of the other regional associations in Europe and Australia have really great accreditation programs too, they're all looking at us for what we're doing, because we're continually raising the bar in terms of animal well-being, you know, the inclusion of our workforce, things like that. So that is a real sense of pride too, that we actually are within this less than 10% of, you know, animal exhibitors in this country that are actually accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which collectively we're all conservation organizations. That's our, you know, if you went to any of the AZA facilities, they'd be telling you the same thing that I am. We're all marching to the same North Star in terms of wildlife field conservation, and then also conservation education engagement here with our local community.
Did you say 213?
Yeah.
So that's about 4 per state. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable that it's only 4 per state that are actually accredited.
Right. So, you know, and the reason that, you know, 30 plus years ago that AZA mandated accreditation, because it was used to be kind of optional, you know, the reason they mandated it was we really wanted to separate ourselves from the roadside attractions. So you think about a gas station 30 years ago that might have had a tiger or a bear. They have a USDA license to do the same things that we do. We wanted to separate ourselves in a big way from that and show that our standards were even higher than what was required to be a USDA licensed exhibitor, you know. And then I like to say, too, that the role of the modern zoo and aquarium is more important today than it's ever been in our history, just because of the state of the world, you know, that one, we're probably the last vestige of nature for a lot of kids, you know, and we know that, and the data proves it, that pro-environmental behaviors develop at a very early age. So the sooner that we can connect a young person with wildlife and wild places, that they'll go on to make good choices in their life. We don't know who's going to be the next mayor, the next president, that can really have a platform to help with wildlife conservation and habitat conservation as well. And it's very pivotal when they're nose-to-nose at the glass with a tiger, they're touching a snake or a chinchilla. Those are memories they'll never forget, and those behaviors start to really develop at an early age. We're also, a reservoir for genetic material, too. So, like our Malayan tiger cubs that were born almost a year ago now, there's only about 150 of them left in the wild. So they're ambassadors for their wild counterparts, but we're also maintaining good genetic integrity for the future if we ever needed it, you know. And with a lot of our species survival plan programs, you know, initially when they were started, I think the big premise was that we're going to be putting a lot of these animals back in the wild. And that's shifted over the years. You know, we're doing that with some species that are going back out. In fact, Puerto Rican crested toads we breed here, we send tadpoles back to Puerto Rico. Last year it was close to 10,000 tadpoles, I believe, that we sent back there. And we've been doing that for years. So there are some animals that we're doing that with, even here in the state of Florida, with striped newts. We're releasing up in Apalachicola Forest, you know. But for a lot of them, it's shifted that we're putting the emphasis on these are ambassadors. And if we can connect people and get them to help fund our conservation programs that we support in range countries. So we have one in Indonesia that helps with rhinos and Sumatran tigers and a number of other species there. That's where we can really make big impact and then work with those local communities. And we're fortunate to have a dedicated department to wildlife conservation with John Lucas at the helm. And he's worked in the Congo for 37 years. He's the one that helped establish the Okapi program that we support. And so we're fortunate to have him here. And he really has a great team that helps lead a lot of these efforts that I'm talking about. We're also unique that the fact that we are a zoo and a botanical garden, we also have a plant conservation officer. And so we're doing work with endangered plants here in the state of Florida and even up into Georgia and that working with them. So, you know, it really makes you feel good at the end of the day that, one, we know people come here to have a good time with their friends, their family, but we can educate them at the same time, whether they know they're getting educated or not, and make those connections to wildlife and wild places. And then also show them that we're doing good things for the planet, and that even by coming to visit and have a good time, they're actually a conservationist, because a portion of every single admission and every membership goes into our conservation budget, and that's huge.
Is there a trend for giving? Are you guys seeing more giving or less giving for your conservation efforts and also zoo attendance?
Yeah, I'll start with the attendance. This last summer was horrible for us. I mean, and we're not the only one in that boat, so to speak. A lot of our other AZA colleagues here in the state of Florida, but across the country, experienced, you know, some downturns in attendance. It, like I said yesterday to one of our team, I said, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out when attendance is going to be high, because all you have to do is plot temperature and attendance over past years. And like yesterday, it was, you know, really great day out here. Temperature-wise, it's a Thursday on a work week, school week, and we had over 1,500 people in the zoo and gardens, you know. So from now till about probably middle of May is our best attendance, you know. I think the other thing that's impacted that, too, though, is the economy, you know, is that discretionary funding is hard for a lot of people, you know. And I think even some of the, you know, the big amusement parks have seen the same downturn, you know. And so, and a lot of people are traveling internationally if they do have the funding. So we're trying to stay top of mind with everyone. So we've really boosted our what I'll call traditional marketing efforts, whether it be radio, TV, billboards, you name it, to stay prevalent in the community, in, you know, people's face, keep ourselves out there and talk about a lot of the same things that we're discussing this morning, that we are a conservation organization. And every time you come to help visit us, you're helping take care of the animals that are here in our care, but they're wild counterparts as well. And I think that's the message that we just have to continue to say, is that you're making a difference when you come to visit.
And that outreach that you have in the community. I mean, learning this morning that it's not just going to a local school, but you may be in a nursing home and other community centers, is such a big part of that outreach.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and then we have those interpreters out on our grounds all day, you know, interacting with our guests. So that's special. We know that particularly young people like to have a connection directly with one of our team. You know, and that's pivotal, you know, for them. And they remember what they what they say, you know. And I go back to my years as a reptile curator in St. Louis, and it was way before the internet, and I had a gentleman call me and say, I talked with one of your keepers, and he described him to a T, so I knew exactly who it was, you know. And he said, this week told me it was very interesting, I'd like to learn some more. And I went back to our team after that, and I said, if you don't know the answer, don't make anything up, because they're going to remember exactly what you tell them. So we started carrying index cards, and we just have them write their address and say, you know what, we're both going to find out what the answer to that is if I don't know it, and I'm going to send it to you. But my point of that is that those interactions with animal care specialists or educators, they remember what we tell them. And that's why that what I said earlier about those pro-environmental behaviors, I think that all that resonates with them for a very, very long time, probably the rest of their life, you yeah. know, of those memories they have of visiting a zoo.
And the next time you're at the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens and you see Dr. Epling walking around, or Etling, excuse me, I'm thinking of Epping Forest now, ask him about snakes. Because you're a snake guy.
Yeah, I'm a herpetologist. I did all of my PhD work in Armenia, where I've been working for 20 years. In fact, wow. I was just back there in May. And it's a classic example of, you know, you go there to do research to find out, you know, what does the species really need to survive in the wild? And I got fortunate to have the right partners, you know, a father, son, who are both herpetologists, but the father was in charge of protected areas for the Ministry of Nature Protection. So having the right partners helps, too, who have become dear friends of mine. They're like my second family. But here 20 years later, we've got protected areas that, due to the work that we, you know, have done with Armenian vipers, have helped a lot of other species as well. So a lot of things you don't know, regardless of how small you might think the project is, has big ramifications in the end. And that's very, you know, that means a lot to me.
You're going to have to ask him a lot about the Python Challenge when we get into our next break.
Okay,
all right?
I will do.
All right, it's 8:57, CEO Dr. Jeff Epling here at the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens. We could talk for a whole hour with you, but thank you for having us here today.
Thank you.
It really means a lot that you've allowed us the time and the all of the great resources today. Jacksonville's morning.